Hello, welcome to episode 10 of Chips of Chorlton. We are back in Rob's kitchen, and I am joined, as ever, by Andy.
Hello.
By Robin.
Hello.
And by Duncan.
Hi, Neil.
The last podcast we recorded was the Mercury one, which seems ages ago because so much has happened. You're now a married man, Rob.
Yes, that is true.
Which is great. And the wedding was pretty good. It was really good, wasn't it? I think everyone really enjoyed it.
Very pleased with it.
Yeah. Particularly Slug. Slug was superb, weren't they?
Yeah. They were absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Went to so much effort to... They did about 14 covers, I think, and they were all incredible.
What were the highlights? Hotline Bling with Duncan singing?
That was pretty damn good.
I have pictures.
Very good. I'll stop burning that hole in the back.
That was fantastic.
This is it. You see, is that, you know, our good friend Barry, the sorcerer of Sunderland, he came up for the wedding, and we knew it was going to come along because you told us the set list in advance, and I was at the back of the room when the occasion did come to it. You having a drink? But yeah, it didn't quite occur to me just the enormity of what it would have been like for people in that room to just when see Barry realize. Step up on stage and realize that he was doing Hounds of Love.
It really was a room full of people from that generation that would really be quite excited by that.
I didn't know. We are talking about it now and the hairs on my arm are standing up. It was absolutely incredible.
Well, Matt, our guest from the last episode, came up to me and just went, Duncan, all my indie boy dreams have just come true. Yeah. And it occurred to me, like, yeah, it was a complete surprise with these people. I knew this was going to come, so it just felt like day 14 of the 2010 tour.
But it was like...
second night in Northampton, a.k.a. your wedding.
But it wasn't.
Sorry to compare it to that.
It was like being at a Future Heads gig, though. He sort of did all the patter as well.
Oh,
like
he split the crowd into two.
And Slug were impeccable.
So good, aren't they? They're absolutely brilliant.
Yeah,
fun on the right. So I've got a whole list of things that have happened, and we'll try and get through them all since we last recorded the pod. We played a gig of all things as well since we recorded the Mercury.
We did,
didn't we? We played it at the new venue in Manchester, Yes, which is run by Now Wave.
We did it to dispel the rumours. You know, we're not just in the podcast game now. Although it is the new rock and roll.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah, you just got to go to where the free shit is.
Yeah.
You know, let's not make no bones about that. It was a very pleasant surprise to be asked to do that Yes gig, actually. Especially at such late notice.
So what do you think of the new place, Yes, everyone?
Well, I really liked it. I think I could imagine myself going for a very nice beer on that roof terrace.
Yeah.
Like a sort of pre-drinky place in town. I mean, the dream is probably to like have a slice of pizza downstairs, have a little drink on the roof terrace, then go to a gig in the Pink Room, which I'm sure that'll happen if I'm still in touch with music and I know any bands. Yeah. But yeah.
For me, because I'm an old fart, it was just a bit busy. It was a bit busy for me.
It was the opening night.
Yeah, but you are quite old.
I'm really old. But yeah, so I want to do the same. I want to go to a gig there. I'm sure there'll be something on soon that I can have time.
But did we say what cover we did then? We did the rap by the Walkmen. And I think, Duncan, you did very well. That's a very, very difficult song to say. Well,
Andy, I think Andy. You did very well.
Yeah, that's really nice. Well, thanks.
Yeah. We see Rob got in there before I could. He compliment blocked me. I think we all had a pretty tough go. I mean, Neil, you shed blood.
I did,
your part. But I'd say the other person that had a free ride in the whole affair was...
Probably me.
Probably you. You're using the picture.
Of course. Yeah.
Skive him. Bastard. But I lost my voice for a week. So
yeah, worth
sign
it,
of a good cover.
Definitely. So what else has happened? You've been paid.
we got our payday.
Yes. What's the payday?
PRS payday.
Oh, today. Shit, man. Fucking hell. Yeah.
Tell me what you got then. Tell me the lowest and the not. Don't tell me the highest. But tell me the lowest.
I don't want to know the highest.
I want the lows.
Well, there were some mysterious ones on there actually as well. You know, well. We know for sure that we got 2p each for Cadenza being used on May the Best House Win in Sweden in 2015. So I don't know how long that was played for.
May the Best House Win. I wonder how that works.
Fight Games, which, you know, is a very, very old song.
We have a rule about Fight Games. Robin, you know the rule. You don't mention pre-Dutch Uncle songs.
Okay, this is a pre-Dutch Uncle song.
I mean, you've done it now, but I'm just having to remind you of that.
So who owns the publisher, how does that work?
I think we sold that to Downtown as well.
Did we sell them that?
Yeah, I think we did. Well, I think it's registered on there. Because they basically... they wanted to sign us, and we were so shocked that a publisher wanted to sign us that we just threw every absolute fucking piece of shit.
And look what it's got you now.
8p.
So was that 8p each?
8p each for that play on Waterloo Road. From 2007.
But it's so funny as well, because I remember the first time that happened, when it was actually on like TV, because this might just be some iPlayer repeats or something like that. But when that episode was first on TV and being told like, you're going to be on Waterloo Road tonight, and didn't watch it, obviously.
No.
But
I heard about the
scenario in which our music was being used, because we've been used on some pretty... I know we got used in Hollyoaks once. Takeover. Technically a Dutch Uncle song. That got used in Hollyoaks for like a really sort of cheeky lads kind of shoplifting scene at the beginning or something. Yeah, you know, because it is kind of cheeky chappies just stealing a bag of Skittles kind of song, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's what it was about.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely where it was going all along. But then the Waterloo Road one was... a woman invites a girl round to her house to kind of coerce her into the world of prostitution.
That's right. Yeah,
she's invited her over to check out if she'd be like, you know, good squeeze for this kind of sort of a thing. And they're both like, they're just drinking like white wine spritzers and giving each other like sordid looks.
She's smiling at her in a sinister way for about a minute.
Yeah. And they're both just pretending to get down to what's on television. And what's on television is us.
On Channel M.
Doing a local TV live session.
Here's where this falls down. No fucker watch Channel M. So it's already unrealistic. What are you watching? Yeah. I mean, they've obviously like turned it on and just lost their remote.
But we all had half mullets and wore neon clothing from Topshop back then.
Interesting thing about that bit, actually, the whole gig was filmed, wasn't it? The whole 40 minutes of it.
Yeah.
And I remember I made a really horrendous mistake in it. Like, I came in to the song that was aired on it eventually, like half a beat late, because I was being an absolute little fucking wanker. And when the camera was at me, I like pointed at it with my drumstick and gave it a little wink.
And I missed your entrance.
I was like, fuck!
So what, have you been listening to any music at the minute? What you listen to?
Well, I listened to the new John Grant album. You did listen to that as well, Duncan.
Yeah, and I watched that video as well. You've seen the video?
You're really impressed by it, aren't
you? Well, maybe not. You're looking at me as great. If like I would know if I'd seen it.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think you would know if you'd seen it. I would say it's... I was trying to describe it to you on Saturday.
Yes,
kind of being this generation's Peter Gabriel Sledgehammer video, if that was possible.
Yeah.
Don't know what this generation is. And unfortunately, there isn't the infrastructure for it to actually get on television, I imagine.
No.
Which is a real shame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've listened to that soundtrack from the movie. What
A Star
it?
Is Born.
A Star is Born, yeah. You thought it was horrible, didn't you?
Well, I mean, I read a couple of reviews about the film, a couple of Guardian reviews, and about the album as well. I thought it was the most disgraceful piece of shit I've ever listened to, probably. Really, like, it's got one of the song titles is that one that Mitch and Mickey does on his own. You know, he does his solo project.
Digging your own grave.
That's the song title. Like, and it's like a really cliche, like bluesy, you know, Southern American song about how you literally dig in your own grave. But that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. It's a shocking piece of shit.
How come you were kind of put through the motions with this? Like, why did you? Was it work related?
No. I had some really boring admin to do and thought, I'll stick on this. Just go on the Spotify, you know, recent releases thing. It's like, I'll give it a chance, you know. But it's like, Bradley Cooper thinks he can write songs and everyone's blowing smoke up his ass and it's not good.
He really can't. Yeah.
He really, really can't.
So we had a question from Will Saunders, at Will R. Saunders on Twitter. And he asked us, or he was sort of suggesting that he is an aspiring musician and I want to be realistic. Should I be planning a second career stroke job that will pay the bills while I do music?
Has he attached an age to his...
He hasn't, no. So I suppose, okay. So if I don't know.
48.
So we'll presume he's on the cusp.
Yeah, he's presumably, I suppose, it's aspiring, learning his trade, if you like. Yeah, so I answered, short answer is yes, but we shall discuss on a future podcast. So yeah, so what would be your advice to an aspiring musician? Do they need a job on top of their music?
Yeah. Sure. I mean, and it's never been more black and white than ever before, really.
Yeah, I feel like there was some ambiguity when we started.
Oh, yeah, we were
duped. could try and live off it, you know, for what we were doing and the institutions that we were involved with, but...
We were duped worse than my short course GCSE in IT. Like, that was a serious...
Waste.
That was a serious scalping of my prospects, I think. Even though I know you guys obviously must have done the same course, but when you're told that IT is a short course, like, yeah, computers aren't going to be that much of a thing. I mean, there's some pretty good table tennis games on on these things. And,
and I just when you're 18, you can play Duke Nukem.
Yeah, exactly. And I got an E in it, thinking it didn't really matter. And, you know, here we are now. And, well, the only, I'm just trying not to talk about porn. I'm trying to think of examples of
computers,
like...
I'm
computer literate. Like
upload and download and all and sideload and all that. Okay. No, I do use a computer for work. Because I write and perform quizzes and DJ and all that lot. And that's something we can kind of get into. But right now, the short answer is... It's just black and white. Yeah, you should definitely have something else lined up. And if I was ever going to say a short piece of advice to anyone that was wanting to, you know, be in a band, but also sort of make sure that their work was fulfilling for them, I'd say there's no harm in trying to just kind of work around the industry itself.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
And just try and stay your own boss as much as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that we've that's something that we've always wanted to do. I don't think it's the same for everyone. Not everyone is in that sort of position where they can do that.
No.
Yeah, you self-employment know, is a bit of a torn sort of...
I mean, if you have...
I mean, it means that for us three, because obviously we are self-employed, we can be flexible if we were to get a gig offer. Same with Pete's job as well. You know, he can get the time. So, I mean, it's not...
Yeah. Yeah, but at the same time, there's so many things that I don't... So within what I do as DJing and quizzing, there's so many things that I don't have in place. Like, I basically have to work every available opportunity that work comes up. I mean, this is going to sound ridiculous to say, and I don't mean it in any weird way, but like the weekend off for the wedding, I think I had 3 offers of work. That obviously I was like, no, that's my weekend off. But unfortunately, there's nothing there in place for me to be able to say, oh, well, I could do those next week. It's like, because they won't be there next week.
Yeah.
So I lost like, over 200 quid or something, but it wasn't like a...
It's worth it. Yeah.
It wasn't on my mind. It wasn't on my mind because those were like semi-regular gigs. I was like, yeah.
This is your speech. That's the best answer.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here today. I'm 200 quid short.
I'm only 200 down. I have not passed go.
To the bride
this
and groom.
Guy, though. Yeah. So, but it's a shame that there isn't really that, you know, and things like holiday, like those are anxieties that do build up, and you have to get used to them. And I've got used to them now, but it wasn't easy to begin
with.
Been
a lot
really
of tough
wasn't.
Times.
Oh yeah,
I think the most dangerous position you can be in as a musician is believing that you can make a full time living out of it and sort of sticking with it. And then you can get yourself into all sorts of trouble at that point. If you say to yourself, I'm a professional musician, I get paid to do this, but realistically you don't earn enough, that's when it sort of becomes difficult. You know, like you might get yourself into debt. You know, there's no shame in having gainful employment as well as being a musician.
Oh yeah, of course.
And also it sets you up for the future as well. If you ever wanna, if you make it as a professional musician, then great. And if not, but you can always go back to something that you've done on the side as well. Like there's no shame in it at all. Like
Absolutely none.
We work for your dad, Dunk.
Well, I mean, that was a particularly weird period as well, because we found out that the album release was getting pushed back.
Yeah.
And we were incredibly skint and we were waiting for that next campaign
to start.
It
was pitched to us as a really cool idea, didn't it? It's like, hey, you know what's a cool idea? Pushing your album back 6 months. Yeah. It's like, no, it's not.
They're like, no, what do we really do for not. 6 months? I don't care.
Hey, you let life happen. Or whatever.
But at the time, your dad very generously gave us, you know, some work. We were on the Six Music.
Yeah, we were on the Six Music
playlist as well
for the first time.
Yeah, on the A-list. Proper,
well, for the second time, but first time B list and first time A list, wasn't it? Yeah. Festo, it was kind of our breakthrough.
Right. So it's out of the touch time. That, yeah. Okay.
Breakthrough single, first single off Out of Touch in the World, gets straight on the B list. And we're just, it was the winter of our discontent. It really was. We were working in my dad's house, who decided to have it. Oh no, he bought next door.
Yeah.
Long story. My dad lived in a terraced house. His neighbor died, and he decided that by some divine reckoning that he should buy that house and then start doing up the whole bloody lot of terraced houses. And then he lost all of his money doing it. It's fine. But we were essentially working at a house that had no central heating or anything like that. Or I think it had a broken kettle, which I now have, because parents love to give you broken shit when you move out.
So we were working
in like kind of like harsh autumn, like it was like November time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was freezing.
And my dad's a theatre producer, and his way of his way of promoting his children's plays was to do bookmarks to primary schools in bundles of 30. So us three were sat around like the three tramps in Waiting for Godot or something, just like picking up bookmarks in groups of 30 whilst warming our hands together with the radio on in the back, in the corner of the room
with your song on.
We called it Festa Watch, and it was great because every time it could be like ka-ching, we'll get that money in in 5 years
just arrived
when we're doing our podcast. It's gonna be good times. And it would get to a point where you'd know how 30 bookmarks felt in your grip so much you wouldn't even have to count them anymore.
We knew how much they weighed, and we could put them on the scale as well. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Oh no, but we had to do. I think it was over 50,000 bookmarks over a course of time, and then I had a massive bust up with my dad when I found out he was paying you two £1 more an hour than me.
So
we were in the pub, and come work with me for the next.
Oh, was he having his half an ale with the proletariat that day?
But he said, yeah,
it's fine.
I was like, yeah, wait, he'd said,
Andy.
You've done the impression now.
Yeah.
Well, he said to me, and I was like,
he doesn't listen to this, I don't think.
He said, you can fucking work for me as long as you like. We pay £7 an hour.
Yeah.
And then I told you, he was like, oh, yeah, it's nice, right? That's £7 an hour. I'm like, he pays me £6.
Yeah. You're a man who knows about these things. How do I delete this hard drive?
Because you have an electromagnet?
No, just fucking take a hammer to it.
Take this hammer, take it into the garden.
I remember that.
Okay. And it's a strange thing. I mean, like, and Pete works for his dad. Like, Pete's been able to kind of make that work with less shouting, a lot less swearing.
So. Yeah, especially within the Dutch Uncle crew, it's only Henry, I suppose, you do sort of music stuff. You do music stuff as well.
I work around music, but I belittle it so much that people don't think I do it. Really, just like,
so actually, I've just sort of, it's only probably me that doesn't do anything kind of music related in their day. Really, that's depressing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, does that depress you?
Yeah, of course it does.
What, that you're not involved in music every day?
Yes,
it is a shit business, though. I mean, I know I'm going full Les McQueen here, but it is shit. It's all right, but it's shit.
I suppose
it's difficult.
It's different for me because I didn't know I was going to get a chance to play in a touring band at the age of like 34 or whatever when I started playing for you guys. So
let's not make a wish.
I know, but I kind of gave up, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and then I kind of have this opportunity now. But I suppose there's probably other artists that we know, like, who do bar work regularly and then...
It's much more normalised. I used to do bar work before I was able to sort of have... Because, you know, doing things like DJing and pub quizzing, it's kind of... I imagine it's similar to the world of sort of acting or wherever else, where these are quite absurd lines of work, but it's all just about your mentality towards it. If you accept that it's absurd, you'll probably be quite good at it.
Yeah.
Just go, well, you know, life's not fair, so I'm just going to try and fancy this kind of thing, and it might take off, and if it does, then great. But before then, I was bar working when I first moved to town, around the time we recorded the first album, and it was horrible, actually, when we were kind of coming through touring with Dan and Anna Aykroyd or the Futureheads or whenever we would do our own shows, because people would recognise me from working at Font, you know, the home of the £2 cocktail kind of thing. And people would say snidey remarks all the time, either at the bar, or even worse, at gigs. I still remember one person after our Ink single launch just going, like, you know, when you're just like, when you're selling merch at the end of a gig and someone just going, yeah, 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 like pretending to be kind of really sort of enthused by what we were talking about. And then just at the end going, yeah, yeah, well, I'll see it, Font Bar, won't I? And then just walking off and it's like, how fucking dare you? Like, you know, but it's not my fault I got a short course at GCSEITE. I didn't know computers were going to be big. Or, you know, it's just porn anyway. Before we do the chip review, I would like to apologise for the impression of my dad, because I kind of realise it doesn't really... I'm not sure I've ever done it in his presence. I must have done it at some point. And there is a chance he might listen to this, or someone might tell him that that's happened, but it's occurred to me that it doesn't really work the other way around. It's not like he's doing impressions of me. So, sorry, Dad.
He might, do. Yeah.
I kind of hope he does now, just to level it out. Sorry, Dad.
Okay. Should we do the chip song?
Yes.
I don't know how it goes.
How does it go?
Chip.
So this week's chips were brought to us by Morley Cheeks. We tried to go to the
couple of places.
We went to try to go to the Creamies. It's shut. We were going to go to Loveline Neighbour, but they don't have chips as an individual item
on
their menu.
And we were also warned not to go in there as well.
Yeah.
By many people and myself, actually. I had a very weird experience there once. Very odd.
So we decided, let's go to Morley Cheeks. It's recently been refurbished, relatively recently. This year, was it?
Yes, it was.
I think the refurb is better than what it was before. I sort of liked it in there.
You have to kind of paint the picture as to what it was before. What was it? To someone that's never been to Chilton, how do you explain Morley Cheeks?
It felt a lot darker before. Feels like the new lighting in there makes it feel more
exciting. It felt like it was it'd been around or already dated when it had first come into Chilton. You know what I mean? It looked grimy, didn't it? It's a really weird place, Morley Cheeks, because I've never really
there's kind of a grotty sleaziness about the place, or there was.
Yeah.
And there kind of still is, in the way that I mean, yeah, they've refurbed, but it's not like a massive... It's not like a whole changing rooms Carol Smiley makeover. Yeah. It's the same vibe, just with some better seating at the back.
It's a Monday when we recorded this, Monday the 15th. So it's all wrong. So, yeah, it should be a weekend. They have a great deal on. £5 for a burger and chips.
Mm. It's a fantastic deal.
Which is really good in Chilton.
It costs you £9.50 any other day of the week.
Yeah. So we were going to go in and buy chips, but we just thought, why don't we just all get a burger as well?
We shouldn't review the burgers properly, but...
No, and we should probably...
But it was a good burger. I had a vegan burger, and it was good.
The burgers were great. Yeah. We shouldn't really review them. I think also that it took ages to come out as well, and that's obviously because we had burgers as well, so we should probably dismiss that from our thoughts of any scorings in a bit. So they're seasoned fries as well. They're just fries, sort of skin on.
But they were just seasoned with smoked paprika, weren't they?
Oh yeah, you weren't into it, Neil.
I didn't like it.
Too EU for you, that one. Wasn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
Did the EU have smoked paprika?
Well, I immediately thought of Lay's crisps and things like that. Like, you know, like kind of like kebab flavored crisps and like very European things.
The
I like
whimsical nostalgia of touring.
Mm, yeah. Cheeseburger crisps.
All those things, but
not for you.
Not for me. I wasn't it there. The chips actually didn't have this horrible red dust on them. They were actually all right. I really like them. I thought they were...
You're a grown man, right? I mean, paprika's not that bad. horrible red dust.
It wasn't seasoned fries. They should probably say paprika
what it's seasoned
fries
with.
Or something. Yeah, exactly.
Do you have an allergy to paprika?
I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Probably.
Is it chilies? Is it peppers?
Yeah.
I don't know. My knowledge is it, yeah. They were fine with the paprika. I didn't really like it.
I thought the chips were consistent Each chip was as good as the last, and I think that's a good.
I think consistency is a good way to sum it up. They were good. They were crispy in a fry sense. I wasn't left wanting for anything more, really.
There was none of the little crappy bits that we've had recently, you know. That
they weren't floppy.
And they weren't Duncan.
That's true.
No, they weren't floppy. That's
true. They weren't oily. My chips from Dixie
yesterday
plates.
Were, so loveless. I'm done with that place.
Which one?
My Dixie chips yesterday.
Oh, well.
With my hangover cure, whatever. Yeah. Yeah, just such a loveless transaction every time I go in there now.
You should have gone to a child's 2-year-old birthday, mate. That's a hangover cure.
Oh, is it? Oh, good Lord. There you go. But back to the chip review. Yeah, they were good chips. I like the paprika. I tried to kind of find some. Well, obviously, you know, I always go for the mood of the place, don't I? I never really talk about the chips. So in this circumstance, as we were leaving and I went to the toilet, I just thought the use of urinal cakes and was a bit much. felt like I was pissing into a bag of popcorn. And
really?
Then I thought, why have they got me feeling like I'm pissing into a bag of popcorn? That's not a good vibe. So so it's not going to mark it down, but it's just literally the
just
only
a
comment.
Yeah,
just a Monday chip review, Rob. That's all I can think of.
And they do, when we were saying we were having them, Morley Cheeks falls into that bracket of places that just have live music. Say if a bar in Chorlton's not doing very good.
Like in the future, you were saying that, like, yeah, I can see it. Like the honeymoon period is going to be over with this refurb, and they're going to have to start getting in crusty open mic nights.
Crusty open mic, and lo and behold, go outside, jam night every Thursday.
Of course it's Thursday.
And I'll tweet the Zoom on this, but it's actually a jam jar. Jam night.
That's nice. I like that idea.
Spread the love on the bottom of it.
That's nice. And there's some musical notes.
Sponsored by Shindiger.
Robin, what musical
notes? No. Can I call, this is shit. It's not nice. It's not an art. This is shit. But yeah, okay. Well, should we mark up?
I've got my calculator out if you want to mark up. Neil, what do you think you would give Morley Cheeks?
6.9.
That's in the calculator. Duncan?
I'll give it 7.
7.4
if they put the heating on.
Just 7 then. Robin?
7.2.
Yeah, I'm going to give it 7.1, was in my head.
I think that's already the winner, isn't it?
Do you think? In the league,
I think this is already...
That is divided by 4, and that's 7, well, 7 dead on, basically.
Wow.
7.05, but...
Chips were good.
That's the main thing.
That's the main thing.
Yeah.
So it would be weird of us probably not to talk about Glastonbury around this time of year, where the tickets go on sale. I don't know whether it was a record, but they all sold out in 36 minutes this year. What's your opinion on that? There's so much vitriol about, it's unfair, people, you know, the way you get tickets and things like that. So how would you do it? Is there a way of making it fairer, or is this the fairest way of getting a Glastonbury ticket?
I think what would be good is if it was a bit like football season tickets. If you buy every year, if you've bought, say, 6, something like that, you know, like over a handful. If you've bought over a handful, you should probably get priority over someone who's never gone. You know what I mean? Like that's, isn't that how season cards work? Or like season cards go from like silver to gold to platinum to whatever.
I mean, you get rewarded for the longer that you've had it, with certain rewards or whatever. You know, the only thing I feel that is unfair is, and a friend of ours had this, is that basically they got tickets for everyone in their sort of friendship group other than one person.
Yeah.
And that's pretty grim. And so basically if there's more than 2 or 3 people, there's no guarantee of you all being able to go together.
However, people that do this in groups, they're aware of the amount they're allowed to get.
Why are people busting down the door to get into Glastonbury? What makes it so good? What makes it so popular?
It's just its whole apocalypse city kind of euphoric vibes, man. It's not a festival. It's genuinely a getaway, isn't it? You know, just away from all
it's a holiday,
from the hustle and bustle. No, it really is though. It's great. And honestly, if you're going for the music, but you're only looking at like the top 3 stages, you're better off staying at home.
You
see better, you can hear it better. Like, I mean, for me, Kanye was amazing.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was shit. But And I remember you texted me as soon as it finished, like, Cranye, lol. Or, like, you did do that.
So me.
Yeah, no. And I thought that's what I was like, that is so Andro. But I was having a great time, but it's because I didn't even think about what was happening in the middle when he was just going on about his fucking emails. I was like, what's an email, mate? I've got a short course of GCSE IT. Porn? Is it porn? Feels like porn. And he had fucking what's his face, you know, Charlie Chupton. What's his name with the big hat?
Lee Thingy.
What the Bonivere? He had him at the side of the stage whilst he was going on about his loving emails, like, he loves the emails. Like,
I don't remember that.
But it was great. It was really good, and it was probably crap. But I could have. And the Bohemian Rhapsody thing was really good as well. If you want to go to watch Dutch Uncles, you got to get a ticket.
That's true. We're not going to be on your telly.
we're not going to be at Glastonbury.
Yeah. Oh, no, we've got some serious hookups in the circus tent.
What, this?
Yeah.
Oh, chips and chocolate from Glastonbury. Like, man, that's... Yeah. Oh. If anyone can sort that out.
Yeah, come on. Someone sort it out.
Evis, if you're listening.
I mean, like, if we talk about how the hell did we even get the Glastonbury slot in the first place for the Big Balloon album, and I'm convinced it's because the radio was on in their office when we did the Laverne session, which was our best session on radio to date. You're just convinced that our label finally asked their one friend who runs the Williams Green tent, can you put our boys on? They went, yeah, I don't see why not. It's like, it took 10 years.
They just forgot it, really, yeah.
Just to do that.
You want to play Glastonbury?
You should have said. It's really easy.
Surprisingly. No, it wasn't. It wasn't easy. It was hard earned.
Yeah. We thought of it as like a sort of, you know, like a almost like a journey of redemption. Like we'd finally got there, and
well, everything was going to be downhill after that. In touring terms.
We treated it like it was their
Yeah, I mean, playing Hull the next day was a very laboured affair.
Yeah, gosh. I think the big rumour for headliner is Elton John. Which would be phenomenal.
Do you not think he'd do the
like
Legends
dad,
bit?
I think he'd have to do. It's his last ever show,
yeah,
isn't
true,
it?
Yeah.
So he'd probably even do the Saturday night, wouldn't he? And he has that. Yeah.
Is he
Saturday
touring
night
after Glastonbury, or does his?
He was touring for 3 years, wasn't
he? Yeah,
he's doing
a 3 year tour. He's doing a 3 year stint.
You remember, we tried to get on it.
We're supporting him, Rob.
You don't remember?
I remember we tried, but that was
Twickenham
last year.
Stadium, two nights, doesn't ring any bells.
2 week residency in Vegas.
Just because he played us once on his radio show. Sorry, maybe twice.
I think it was
twice. Played us twice, and we thought, we're in.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he played us, and his words were, that was Dutch Uncles, and I love them. Whoa. I love them very
fucking
much.
Fucking love them.
I want to talk about a survey from Sussex University, of all places. So they found that the number of schools offering music A level had fallen by more than 15% in the past 2 years. So a real drop in, I suppose, what, probably classic musical education almost, if you sort of put it that way. And also, the picture is even worse for music tech A level, which is something that I did, funnily enough. And that being offered has declined by 32% over the same period. So a drop in both music tech A level and music A level. Did you guys do music A level? I presume, Rob, you definitely did.
I did both. I did music both. And music tech.
Right. I did music tech AS level.
Yeah.
I applied for music tech.
that computer course didn't get you in there.
The teacher made an exception of me in the sense that he did not accept me.
Okay.
And it was bullshit. And then a year later, these clowns joined the college. We started a band. And as soon as I was friends with Rob's, it was all smiles and hugs at that point. I was like, fuck you, mate.
Oh, yeah, you ended up being like the guest singer on every...
I was the guest singer on most of the coursework.
Right.
for people... Was it music tech coursework?
It was, yeah.
Bloody hell, yeah. I remember singing like...
Enter Sandman.
Like, you know, like Baroque remixes of Enter Sandman. Yeah.
Do you think this trend is worrying for I suppose, being professional musicians and also having degrees in music tech and also music? Do these stats worry you?
I just think it's a real shame. I don't really know. Surely, like, students will have the choice of other colleges when they, if they really want to do music or they really want to do music tech, they could potentially go to a different college where they could do that. But if not, then it's a real shame for them because.
Well, I mean, even when we did it, it's still music tech, especially in college, was massively underfunded.
Especially because the week we joined, the technician who was working with our music tech teacher stole all the computers.
Yeah,
ran away. To be fair, like Andy said, the course was incredibly underfunded, and this meant that
do you remember the multi-core of wires coming out of that drum studio? They couldn't close the door. It's not even a soundproof room.
Yeah,
like, why spend all the money on a soundproof door if you can't close it?
Frustrating. Yeah,
it's a shocker, isn't it? And I mean,
it's almost like they were trying to get rid of it.
Yeah, they
from
were.
Then.
Yeah,
about this then. Is what classic, 14 years ago.
Well, you know, it's the same now. It's classic conservatism. It's not funding the arts properly because it would seem that they were to the, you know, the less sort of progressive thinkers that they were encouraging people just to be frivolous with their careers and get educated in the arts doesn't mean anything, and you know, it doesn't add anything to society.
This is back when the country was spaffing money.
Yeah. Well, yeah, right. But it's like that now, and this is the reason, and you know, this filters down. It is government policy not to fund the arts as much as everything else, and we don't want to get too political about it, but Tom Watson, we were talking about Tom Watson and Corbyn have drawn attention to the fact that the music industry contributes, how much is it?
I've got it in front of me. It's 4.5 billion to the economy each year.
And Ed Sheeran paid more tax than Apple and Amazon last year or something.
So I suppose Ed Sheeran's sort of a really good point.
Let's not start making him good now.
No, not making him good now.
It's an interesting point, whatever you think of it.
So I suppose, I'm playing devil's advocate now, I think. Do you think people's perception of what music is has changed to a point, like, as you've taught music, haven't you, Rob, to people who only want to know how to play Ed Sheeran? Wasn't that sort of some guy said?
That was an issue. Yeah,
and,
yeah. When I was teaching
Pale Waves,
I did teach music theory to Pale Waves amongst other students, yeah. And they none of them gave a shit. I was teaching music theory and composition, and I was just trying to get across the point that, you know, you don't need to know everything, but if you know these certain things, it might mean that you can unlock other avenues and you can explore composition in more interesting ways.
Having the tools doesn't mean you have to use them.
And it was like you'd have someone at the back say, but Ed Sheeran doesn't know what a D phrygian is. Like, he probably does.
So
I don't know whether the perception of music or music ed has changed. It surprised me about the music tech piece. Or does it? Thinking about it, do people sort of see music technology as something they could do at home, go on YouTube and learn now? You know.
Well, I think it has got through to, the realization has got through to people that it is an incredibly difficult industry to get into. It's not like training as an accountant and getting a job as an accountant. You can be the number one in your class at a music tech course, and there's absolutely no chance you're going to get a job in a studio. You know, it's still about who you know and how you network and what sort of a person you are, basically.
Well, your further education qualifications were at SSR, weren't they?
Yeah.
So that was that in engineering?
Yeah, yeah, music engineering. But it wasn't just audio engineering.
I imagine, like, from what you've said about it or the experiences of doing it, it definitely felt like it was a saturated market, even at that stage, when you realise that you're in a room with 30 other people thinking, I can count the venues on two hands that are in this town. Where are these opportunities going to come?
For me personally, I felt like the quality of the education was good. It was fine. You know, doing the theory aspect at Bolton University and doing the studio stuff, the facilities were great and it was good. I just wish that I'd done something else because I already knew a reasonable amount of how to work Pro Tools and production and things like that are more about taste and, you know, talent and, you know, just general feel.
Yeah.
you know, I wish I'd done something else so that I could have like something else.
You had to pad my DI boxes for about 8 years. I didn't even know how to do that, did I?
I did.
You're looking that I spent 30 grand on doing that, don't you?
You spent 30 grand so I wouldn't have to pad my DI boxes. I'd just be there like, is this porn? Is this it? Is that porn? Bosses, yeah.
Would you recommend to people to do music tech or engineering, or I suppose
they want
to
do it,
do music as the original?
Yeah, definitely. But like both, I mean, obviously it depends on where you go and who your teacher is. You know, we were talking before about, you know, we went to the same school but we had different music teachers, and because
Sweet
of
Corn
that
Ed.
Duncan had Sweet Corn Ed.
He was a dick. Like, I had raw talent. I don't say that often.
Have.
Well, the thing is, like,
whatever.
And Sweet Corn Ed, he also laughed. Another friend of ours was saying he's going to take music for GCSE, and he laughed at him, so he didn't take it.
Right. It did feel a little bit elitist at our school. Yeah, weirdly.
Yeah, no, I had him in year 9, and I'd had other people. Like, it was his first year at the school, I think. I had him in year 9, and it was that moment in school where you start. I mean, without making our school sound ultra posh or anything, but there were two houses to the school, weren't there? There was Bradshaw and Isherwood.
Yeah, I don't think you could describe it as posh.
It was definitely not posh. It was somewhere in the... It's not middle...
It's
whatever.
It's a comprehensive school.
But like in year 9, you end up kind of being thrown in with the other side of the... Like, you end up getting mixed around a lot more than you would... It's not just you in your class, is it, anymore in year 9? Like, you know, you have a whole gang of other people. And in my music lessons... I don't know, for some reason I did probably get a bit cocky, so I was probably acting a bit of a clown, but I knew what I was doing as well. I'd had a few keyboard lessons in year 7, I'd done a preparatory exam, you know, I knew what F was, as opposed to what was questioned of me in college. But like, yeah, and he used to stop me from going into the class, like he'd always make sure I'd be the last one to go into his classroom, and every time he'd close the door and go, "We're not going to have any trouble, are we, today, Dunk?" I'd be like, "What are you talking about, trouble? I'm having fun." Like, you know, there was nothing that was like kind of, you know, I wasn't disturbing the learning process or anything like that, but he just decided to sort of pick me out in the class and sort of make an example of me. And then I told him halfway through the year, "I'm not taking music as an option because of you." And he seemed genuinely affected by it.
That's good, because I mean, the other teacher...
But he could still go fuck himself.
The other teacher, Mr. Whiteman, who was our teacher.
Yeah.
I think he was more of an inspiration. Well,
he's
really
great. He's a lovely lad. Yeah. Really nice guy.
He was my form tutor for a couple of years. He was all right.
But again, this is he was teaching music in the sort of face of adversity as well, with fucking zero funding, no instruments to, you know, it was
keyboards with the DJ button.
Yeah, exactly. There were like 10 of them in a room, but he somehow did it and, you know, put in the extra effort.
At school, we had that supply teacher who came and stole all the equipment as well.
Stole those mini disc players. Bad investment, though.
Love mini discs.
Yeah.
Is it worth doing? Yeah, it is worth doing. But you also need to be able to not do it at the same time. If you're going to get in this industry, you need to be able to not need it. But then you also need to party every waking hour of your life.
Yeah,
that's a very important point.
You need to.
You never get taught that.
And listen to as much stuff as possible as well.